This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, Tanya. Formed a company. Wow, that sounds important, doesn't it? It's like, you know, it's filled out the papers and everything. So we'll see where it goes from here. But, I'm Greg. And if you haven't seen the Whiz Bang show before, great. Because if you have seen it before, there's a little bit of a rerun going on here today. But if you've been following the blog, has anybody seen the blog? All right. So, okay, that's good. That's good. So this might be fresh for some people here, and that's great. So, yeah, Dennis and I have put this thing together, and it's a work in progress, to say the least. And, so we're moving ahead as quickly as we can. So a little bit about me. Anybody know what game that would have been from? That was a prop that I built for a game that I did. Not Dr. Dude, no. Strange what? Strange Science, yeah. Strange Science, yeah. So anyway, that's my thinking cap. I put that on whenever I need to, and which is most often. That's Dennis. Yeah, that's Dennis. So we like things in pairs, And I forgot I was coming to like wine country, And it's like, here's this cheap red from the East Coast, I'm like, I'm not a wine person at all. And I was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. And then a big hunk of Swiss cheese. I mean, come on, what kind of pair is that? So I'm from Chicago, right? So that's the pair I know, That's my thinking, So. And another perfect pair, of course, that Dennis and I worked on. At least we like to think that it's a perfect pair, and I think she does too. But anyway, we had some fun together back in the day designing, and we enjoyed everything we did together, and it's just one of those things where Dennis and I really, really work well together. We have similar tastes and interests and everything, so it just falls into place. Before I met Dennis, I was doing pinball art. I started in 1978 at Bally, and Harlem Globetrotters was my first game that I ever worked on. Actually, Skateball was, but that's a different story. But Harlem Globetrotters was the first artwork that was produced on a game that I worked on. And then Fathom, of course, is one of the highlights of my career. I didn't know it at the time. It's been coming to shows like this where early on I met Gary Flower at an early Chicago Expo, and he told me what a fantastic piece this was. And I said, really? And he said, absolutely. And since then, it's been one of the most talked about games when people get to see me and meet me. I just can't believe it. It's like, I get a lot of compliments for it, and I'm grateful for that because it was a lot of effort. It was a hard piece to pull off, but it was fun to work on. And then, of course, I worked with Steve Ritchie. I had never worked with Steve Ritchie until Star Trek The Next Generation. When I walked into Williams, the day I walked in, Steve was like right in my face, and he said, so, okay, we're going to do a game together eventually, right? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And so he showed me the one he was working on, which was Black Knight 2000, and so it took a while, but we finally got together on Star Trek The Next Generation, and we're able to work well together. Steve and I are a little bit of a yin and yang situation when it comes to personalities, but I think that's the magic of it all. And I can say I worked on Steve's last game for Williams, so there's some importance to that, but definitely had fun on this. He was Skullboy, and I was the other host of the game, and we had a blast working on this project. Revenge from Mars, I only put this up here because it was my last game that I ever worked on until when William shut the whole production line down. So that's the last piece of pinball art I did until Whoa Nelly. Dennis, without me, yeah, he came in the door with an idea. He got an audience with Bally and created this interesting-looking cabinet that was different, got away from the whole cabinet on legs theory. and wanted to give pinball a whole new profile. So they hired him on, I don't know if it was on the spot, but they hired him and gave him a job, and he started working. His first game was Special Force, and then he went on and did Blackwater 100 and did, you know, a bunch of cool manly theme games, until he met me. And then he worked at Stern, and I didn't, and he got to do Pirates of the Caribbean, Wheel of Fortune, great games. But it was here where we really got together, and I had a game idea that I had wanted to do called Party Animals, and when Dennis heard the theme, he loved it. I had proposed it earlier to Greg Kamik, and Greg didn't want any part of it, but when Dennis heard me talking about it, he was like, yeah, I'll do that game. That sounds cool. So we worked on this together. I did not do the art package. Pat McMahon did the art for this. So, but it was a fun project, and it's really what started the whole party genre for Dennis and I. After we got to Williams, we took that party a little bit further with Elvira and the Party Monsters, of course, and then eventually out to the Party Zone, and that's where it all ended. I mean, you can't go any further with parties beyond the Party Zone. So, and the interesting thing of that is, I show here, is the jukebox on Party Animals kind of then morphed into the disc jockey on Party Zone. So there's a whole line of thinking that goes behind all this that, you know, that we kind of, you know, just goes with the way our brains work, I guess. We worked, like I said, on Elvira and the Party Monsters together, and just some sketches that never made the game, but this was also a fun project, and we were proud that it was the first Williams license. Roger Sharp brought the license to Williams, and we were able to, under the Williams banner, it was still Bally, but Williams had never really done a licensed product before, so that was cool. We brought licenses, you know, the first project, so that was fun. Dr. Duke, it allowed us to bring a comic book character. Dennis wanted to do a comic book theme. He had thought about doing the Turtles game, the Ninja Turtle game. And instead, I kind of drove it in this direction. I said, why don't we not pay for the license and do our own character and our own theme? And he was like, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So the first sketch is on the left. The finished backlist is on the right. When we brought this, I told this story before, but I love it. When we brought this to a meeting where we kind of pitched the theme, Steve Kordick, everybody knows who Steve Kordick is, was at the meeting, and he was on the other side of the conference table. And we pitched the whole thing. We said what the shots were going to do and everything. And Steve just kind of sat there blankly looking at us. And he goes, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about, but you know what? What the hell? Go ahead and do it. So we got the thumbs up from Steve, which was cool. And it's classic. I mean, classic Steve. And we love him for that. So there's the whole party triptych there. So if you ever want to own the party triptych, those are the three games you have to have in your possession. So that was the end of the party. But it wasn't the end of Elvira. We pitched another Elvira-themed game. A lot of people in-house at the time said, why do you guys want to do another Elvira game? And we said, because we think it's cool, and she loves pinball. So it seemed to be a natural. And we were going to take it in a different direction anyway. So this was Scared Stiff, obviously, and that was our last game together in 1996. Unfortunate events, layoffs. Dennis got laid off, and we went on. We kept going, and eventually went into Pinball 2000. But this was the beginning of the end, really, for pinball. There were other good games that came out during this period, no doubt. But 96 was probably the real beginning of the end for Williams Pinball. So that brings us to today, Whiz Bang Pinball. Dennis and I got together last year for the first time in many years out at Seattle. And it was kind of serendipitous. We didn't know we were going to see each other out there. And the real interesting thing that we took away from the show, and I'll say thanks to Ron Chan, I had a long talk with Ron, and he was telling me about all these different custom games that were being done. And he mentioned to me, he says, as an artist, you know, you should really think about that, you know. And he was right. It's like this has afforded me the opportunity to at least get back into pinball, and I've been able to meet some great people through this experience. So we were in Seattle, and I literally lost sleep that night. So the next morning we were leaving town, and we parked our Woody like illegally outside of the Mecca Cafe and Bar. And that's not really our way, but it is parked illegally. So we had a great breakfast, and I posed this to Dennis. I said, hey, Dennis, you know, we've learned a lot here about people doing custom pinball. What if a couple of industry guys, you know, brought some sensibility to this thing, and our own sensibility? I'm not saying that nobody else has sensibility, but, you know, let's bring something to this and see if we can do it. And he was like, you know, that's kind of cool. Let's try it. And we had no idea what we were getting into, but, you know, baby steps, you know, one step at a time. So we sat in the back, and, you know, I threw this idea at him, and he seemed to like it, as you can tell. And we flew back home really fast. This joke is getting old, but we flew back home, and on that flight, we were so jazzed, we came up with like 100 ideas for games, you know. I mean, some of them were ridiculous, but it was like, you know, it was just, we were so energized by the idea to work together again and to do pinball again that we got home, and Dennis had already had a name, Whizbang, that he was playing with for his company that he never did anything with. So he said, hey, let's just use Whizbang for the name of the company. So I said, sounds good. So we wrote our mission statement. You know, we're artists and designers. We're not businessmen. So we kept it simple. So we kind of just did this. I don't know who's who, but we knew that, you know, there wasn't a third guy right now, but, you know, who knows. So we put that up there, and that's what we want to be, but, you know, that doesn't mean we're, you know, we are going to be. That's what we wanted to be. So I'm sorry, I forgot there was a flashback involved. I hope everybody's okay. I just want to walk you through that. You know, everybody all right with that flashback? Okay, so six years before we met in Seattle, we had, again, serendipitously met in downstate Illinois at the Art of Pinball show. And again, not a planned thing for us to get together. But at that show, Dennis became interested in this game. It's Continental Cafe. He wanted to own this game. I don't know why, but he wanted to own it. So he bought it, and he brought it home. And he just loved the whole retro aspect of it. He's a big fan of anything retro, and so am I. And so he bought this game from the Geistings and brought it home. And so then 6 years later, when we came up with this idea to do a custom game, he was like, let's do it on that game. He goes, I've got that game, so let's just do it on that game. And I said, okay, you know. So it's electromechanical, and for him and I, we entered the business already in the solid state era, so we didn't know that much about electromechanical games. So this section is devoted to learning more about electromechanical games. So Dennis contacted the EM guys. There's a group of EM guys. And they said, well, your local guy is Ken Walker. And he's going to be able to get your game running. Because apparently, when Dennis brought that Continental Cafe home, it sat around for a few years. And when he plugged it in, it wasn't working. So we brought it out to Ken's place. And with the help of him and TeamEM.com, we got the game running in a short amount of time. So while these two guys were diligently trying to figure things out, well, I don't know if Dennis was trying to figure things out, but I took pictures, and we got it together, and we got it lit up, and we got it running and playing. So that was step one of getting this game together. So after this, hang on just for a second. Dry them out. Thanks. So after we got to that point, Dennis came up with the pitch. He goes, "You got to come out here. I got an idea, and I want to see what you think." So he knew that I like fruit crate artwork. I mean, this is of American artwork. It's just like amazing. And to me, I was listening earlier today to a talk about pinball art, the influences that pinball might have had on other industries and art forms and stuff. I look at this as a way that maybe pinball artists were influenced by this type of art, fruit crate labels. So he says, "I want to take my love of fruit crate labels and the natural tie-in that it has to pinball art, and especially in Roy Parker's era of artwork, and of course pinup art, and kind of combine all that together, and bring the master, of crazy, stupid humor to this whole thing, with a paintbrush stuck up my nostril, and Dennis's fine tuning." And the tools he uses for that design fine-tuning, and our love of fresh produce to create Woe Nelly Big Juicy Melons. It didn't start as Big Juicy Melons. It started as something else, but it was, I think, sweet or ripe or something like that. But eventually we said, hey, let's not pull any punches here. You know, they're big. So this is Dennis's first sketch of the cabinet that he brought in to show me, and as an artist, I was like, well, you know, it could use a little work, but it got the point across. It was really, you know, what sold me, and the idea that, you know, he would build this, and it would be cool. So, and it wasn't just sitting in a pinball machine. So I did a sketch. We came up with a bunch of ideas for sight gags on the back glass, and we went crazy with ideas, and pretty much used every one of them in the thing. And it was while we were designing, just the ideas for this, I said, hey, maybe there should be a guy on a horseback, and even the horse is, like, reacting to this girl, you know? And when I said that, I'm thinking, you know, oh, whoa, hey. And that's where Woe Nelly came from. So originally the game was Big Juicy Melons, and we tagged on Woe Nelly as the brand name. So we felt that made sense. So Dennis got started on taking that Continental Cafe game and stripping it down literally chopping it. So, you know, just like the car guys do, we've taken a 57 Gottlieb and we've chopped it. So literally. So here's the work in progress. That's Dennis's outdoor studio where he stomped all over the wood to get it to weather properly, and flamed it up and did all sorts of fun stuff to it, and started building the cabinet for the playfield and the base cabinet. And then we just got some real fruit crate label and pulled it off the internet just to get the point across that, you know, we would put our own art on it eventually, but we just wanted to show people that this was, the direction we would take. And Dennis enjoyed putting that label on just right. Early version of the base cabinet before we added slats and stuff like that to make it look more like a fruit crate. There's the slats. And there it is with some very placeholder artwork of cantaloupes. That's since changing, and we're taking that a step further. I put no legs on here, but we introduced this game last year at Expo. And it was just pretty much the playfield cabinet and the base cabinet. And we didn't have the back box or anything. So everybody was like, that's really cool. So it's going to have legs, right? And we were like, no. This is it. This is how it's going to be. It's going to be sitting on a crate. And they're like, oh, okay, all right. But to this day, we still get so many people going, well, where's the legs? So so there it is together with the old placeholder back box sitting on top. This is one step further, the back box. He built the back box. And I took the artwork just to see what it would start looking like. And at this point, Dennis went crazy. He started buying games because our business was going to take off. So, we got games. So we went out to the Chicagoland show, and he had ordered some games off eBay and stuff. So Dennis is now a game collector. He didn't know he was going to be, but he's definitely a game collector. So we ended up getting a couple more Continental Cafes to build on, and it's really helped us too, because we can actually compare what we're doing from one to the other now when it comes to taking the wiring harness and moving it over. That was one of the early ideas, this is another game that we bought at Expo last year, and there's our warehouse. This is our warehouse at the WizBank Studios of other games that we have now. So we realized we needed more help. We started thinking that we were just going to take Continental Cafe and re-art it and have the same game. But the more people we talked about this with, the more it became evident that Continental Cafe was okay in its day, but, really, you're going to just do that game again? So as we talked to more electromechanical gurus, we started to learn that, yeah, you can take things and kind of maneuver it around and make something a little bit different, a little more challenging maybe. So with this was perfect because Dennis wanted to do a unique play field for this. So, we definitely, we got input from Roger Sharp. He came out to the studio and he said, yeah, if you guys can like take, this play field and turn it into something else, and he says, then, it's even better because you're leaving, just another stamp of what you guys do together. So Ken and his friend Chris Edler came out and started deconstructing the wiring harness. Dennis started with some early designs and had some ideas, and we got some assistance from Steve Charland, long distance. He was throwing out input. And Steve makes it sound so easy that you can do anything you want. And, we're in Chicago. He's in California, so it's a little bit difficult. But anyway, from the beginning, there's the original Continental Cafe playfield. Dennis's first iteration of the playfield is in the middle, and that shows how there's some similarities to the Continental Cafe playfield. But he started thinking a little bit outside the box. But it wasn't until, we really sat down with both Mark Wayna and Ken Walker into how far we could take this and how far we could repurpose the wiring and the scoring from Continental Cafe into Wonelli. So then Dennis took off and did his own layout, which is a lot more probably 60s-oriented of a layout compared to a 50s-oriented layout. We do still have a gobble hole, but I'll tell you what, the game is playing great. We've got it that far along now, and it's fun to play. So here's reconstructing the wiring harness. Mark Wayna has now been quoted as saying, this was way more than I thought it was going to be. So, because at first I think he thought, oh yeah, okay, no problem. But it's become a work of love here, and everybody's putting their love into this. Obviously we had to mark everything and get everything lined up properly. In the meantime, since I don't do that stuff, I was busy, doing color sketches and color theories and stuff like that, so we played with different cabinet decals. Dennis said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we painted the inside of the cabinet to that looked like the inside of a cantaloupe, you know. So he goes, go to Home Depot and get a cantaloupe color for me. And I was like, okay. So I go into Home Depot and I go, I need a cantaloupe color. And she goes, you mean this one called cantaloupe? I'm like, perfect. So we painted the inside. Short of painting seeds in there and everything, right now it's still just a painted cantaloupe color. I did the first color sketch. It looks a little hot here. The whites are really screaming on the screen, but maybe it's just my angle. But anyway, that was my first sketch, which was, I was still thinking, at that point in time, I was talking to Wade Krause. Everybody told me, you got to talk to Wade. So I had long conversations with Wade, and we talked about doing a more retro backlash with flat color and everything like that. But the more I thought about it, I really wanted to bring more of my later work into this. So I really wanted to do a painting, and that was another thing. I wanted to do a painting. When I was all done, I wanted to hang the finished painting on the wall. But in this day and age, you know, I've got this beautiful stylus and a nice 21-inch Cintiq, and it's so much more efficient to do that instead of a painting. And so part of me is kicking myself for not doing a painting, but for the ease of getting it translated to films and everything in this day and age, I figured, well, I'll keep it digital, and so I'm doing a digital painting. So we took the game to Milwaukee in a stage of where it was able to flip. It wasn't scoring, it was flipping. So in March, we brought it to Milwaukee, and those are Roger Sharp's hands on the flipper buttons over there. He tested it, and we got his stamp of approval. He also gave us some good suggestions for a few more additions of rollover switches and stuff like that. And we attracted a small audience with it, and we got Roger playing it, so it was fun. We had a blast up in Milwaukee. Got everybody playing it for the first time, got suggestions, input, and stuff like that. So this is a video I'm going to play, and if I click in the middle of the screen, it should play. I don't know. I don't think I can just click forward, so I don't know. I don't know exactly how. Yeah, I probably got to do it with the mouse, right? So this is the first flip in Dennis's studio, and I don't know if it's got sound. Oh, yeah. It's very raw. This was before Milwaukee.
This is one of these. Don't try this at home, kids.
I think I wired all this right, because I...
got the ball, the one pinball.
What happened to the ball?
Oh, nice.
Oh, I designed it that way. I knew that would happen.
See, I knew it would happen on this.
Yeah. Is it safe to stick my hands in it?
Yeah, we were worried it would never fall in there. Ding, 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 ding.
Uh-oh.
Oh, nice.
I like it in the back of the top. Oh, look at that.
That's so light.
Thank you.
real designer noises seeing his Whitewood play for the first time. So it's one of those things where, you know, that's really raw. I'm not a videographer by any stretch of the imagination, but I just wanted to capture that moment because, you know, it was just fun to see, you know, going from sketches to Whitewoods to, you know, getting the thing to flip right away. So that was a lot of fun. So this is this part of the show is the summer of 2010 progress report. So yeah, we drink a little Lionicle, you know, when we're working. But we went out by to start summer. We went out by Pat Lawler. Dennis's first Whitewood was all hand drilled and that kind of thing. So oops, hit the button. Don't do that. So we went out to Harvard, Illinois, and out to Pat Lawler Design, and made use of his high-tech equipment and got the Dennis's next iteration of the playfield after he learned things from that first Whitewood. We took the next iteration of the playfield out to Pat to get routed, and that's the results of the routing for that. And we thank Pat for his help on that. Again, this is the finished art for the back glass that I just finished on September 8th. And again, it looks hotter than hell here, but it's probably just the way it's being projected. But we are getting back glasses printed soon, and they will be available at Expo in Chicago. We'll have shipping prices and everything eventually. We got to find out what packaging is going to cost and how much it weighs. But these will be available shortly. So I just saw the proof for it at the printer the other day, and things are looking good. Originally, like I said, I was going to work with Wade on this and possibly have Wade work with me on this. But the logistics of Wade in California and me in Chicago, I was going to have to fly out there and stuff. So we kept it local. These guys are 6 miles from my house. And they've printed stuff for Illinois Pinball, and the KISS Backlash repros were done by them. I think they did a really nice job on those. So I trust these guys, and I feel they're going to do a really nice job. This is the update of the playfield. Dennis went and put some art on the plastic himself. He's got Photoshop loaded on his computer, so he went and got a bunch of sweet juicy melons to put on the plastics, and he also wrote out the rules of the game. And on the other side, just a few days later, Mark came back. We got the thing lit up, shooting, and just a few days after that, we got the play field actually scoring. On the right is the old insert with the two player. It's now a one player game. And it's going to have 1,000 scoring. So we've added a reel, and we're working out the all the wiring for that. And again, we learned from Steve Sharlin and Ken Walker that that's all very doable. So it's going to have 4 reels, 1 player. I believe it shoots 3 or 5 ball. So that's kind of where it's at right now. We're going to bring it to Pinball Expo in Chicago and have it playing there. And all that kind of good stuff. So at this point, that's where we're at. We hope to have the game finished by the end of the year. But before we can do that, we're raising capital. The next big investment for us is getting the playfield screened. Yes, the artist is the slacker of the group, and the playfield won't be screened at the next show, but it will be playing. So. We need to raise capital, so I do have T-shirts, a limited supply of T-shirts here available at this show, but we also have them to order online at our blog. You can find us on the blog. We are going to offer hand-built frames by Dennis that look like crate frames, so that's coming soon. We don't have prices for that yet, but we'll be notifying people shortly if you're interested in that. And if you haven't seen our blog, We're at WhizBang Pinball at blogspot or .blogspot.com. We're also got a Facebook page if anybody's doing Facebook. So thanks for listening, and again, thanks to all the guys running the Pacific Pinball Expo here. You guys do a great job. And thanks for having me. So at this point, I'm open for questions. If it's too technical, I might not be able to answer it, but I'd be willing to try. So, Gary.
You mentioned that it's three or maybe five boards. Did you consider Attaball?
We considered a lot of things, and I think Attaball was brought up, and I, for whatever reason, we dismissed that. But, yeah, I believe me, when we were, like, ideating on all these, once we found out that a couple of wires this way or that way or whatever makes a whole new, you know, experience, then, yeah, the ideas were flying. But then it was like, whoa, Nelly, you know, bring those back down to earth, you know. So that's kind of how that happened. Yeah, but we have talked about it, definitely.
For raising capital, have you thought about, are you going to be doing pre-orders?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you know when that'll start?
We, as far as the, you know, I forgot to mention, pre-orders on the back glass, I would imagine you're saying, right?
No, just kind of a whole for the game itself.
Well, here, this is a huge factor that I forgot to mention. This is an object of art, and we are doing game one right now. Game one is our prototype. Game two and three are available because we have Continental Cafes to do the same trick. Okay, and once we have game one, we will have parts and printed parts and all that stuff for game two and three. So theoretically, this is a limited series of three games that we're doing, all looking like you saw with the crates, the stack of crates theme. Now, this is very early on, but we are looking into the idea of taking this, and again, we've got a lot of paperwork to do, a lot of number crunching, but we are looking into taking a hybrid solution of a board set along with the electromechanical devices and turning this into something that may be able to be semi-mass produced, and when I say mass, limited quantities, of course, because we are a company, but we don't have a facility right now. But as we talk about this, we're talking to people about, you know, hey, yeah, I've got the facility. If you need to build something, here it is, you know, blah, blah, blah. So very early stages here, but yes, could there be more than three of these games built? Yes. In saying that, would they all be the stack of crates object of art? No. They would be legs, but they would have a similar look with the crate look, not just a standard pinball cabinet, but very early stages. So we don't have the numbers or the wherewithal to get past that at this point in time, but we are trying to crunch that as soon as possible so that, A, we can, you know, talk to people and take orders or get people to invest or whatever the thing is and get it to that level. So this is very early on, and that's kind of what we're looking at. But, yeah, I did forget the very important part, that the three games that could be available are kind of like an object of art, and, you know, we're going to see where that goes. So, but backlash pre-orders, yes, I can do that now. And that's helping us raise capital as well. So, yep.
Yeah, do you have sketches for the playfield artwork yet?
Like I said, the artist is the biggest slacker in the team. So, no, I don't. How embarrassing is that? But I have been looking at it and have been playing it and definitely have started the thought process. So it's funny because since we started this last year, my freelance business has actually begun to blossom as well. So I'm now, you know, juggling many things, and which is good. It's a good thing. So well, there's a lot of stuff going on, and That's why I said we hope to have game one done near the end of the year, because, yes, I have not started the play field art yet. So, and there's some surprises in store with that, too. We've been talking about some additional add-ons, for that kind of thing, too. So we don't want to give it all away.
Mm-hmm. My question is, how are you leveling crates? I mean, you're just doing it like sticking stuff underneath it.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. Earlier on, there's pinballs have, here's a crate, right? And here's a pinball game, right? So at some point, we had to figure out, hey, where's that angle going to come from if it's two crates sitting on top of one another? So the cool thing that Dennis came up with was a 2x4. So the 3 degrees that this electromechanical game played at is being provided accurately by a 2x4, and it kind of goes with the theme of some farmer just put all these crates together and threw this pinball game together, and that's kind of the backstory. It's part of the whole homage to a homemade pinball game. So, and it works really good. But the base crate has leg levelers on it. So yes, it will stay. And that's one of the surprises. Dennis came up with a genius solution, because this thing, when we brought it to Milwaukee, well, it was on casters at Milwaukee. So that was like, whoa. But he came up with a genius solution that I can't reveal here yet today, where when you play the game, it's great. It's really a nice trick that he added, and so more to come. Yep.
When you were making Scared Stiff, did you also have that crate obsession, so to speak? Because
it's kind of a throwback to Scared Stiff. I don't know. I guess that both of us might have had that obsession going on. We're obsessed with crates. And I worked in the video game business for about 10 years, and, the joke was crates. Every time you play a video game, when's the first time you're going to see a crate in the game, especially the shooters and stuff like that. So, we did have a bit of an obsession with crates.
You said you were taking pre-orders for Backglass. How much were they?
The price of the Backglass is going to be $300. They are on plexiglass because of shipping. We didn't want to have the liability and actually packing them for shipping wherever we're going to sell these to. So they are on 1/8-inch plexi, and I think that's also safer for hanging on a game room wall. I know when my kids were little, I had a bunch of Backglasses in my basement, and I had a microphone stand because I was in a band at the time, and I hit a Backglass that wasn't framed. It was just held on with mirror clips, and I hit it with the mic stand, and the thing exploded and stayed. It didn't explode out, but it stayed. My basement was 35 feet long, and I found pieces at both ends of the basement from the center. And after that, all those Backglasses came down, and so for safety and for shipping, we decided plexi was the best. The hardcore collectors are going to say, well, plexi scratches, and it does. But when they ship, they're going to have the peel-off protective liner on the front surface. They'll be slip-sheeted. We're going to handle them with ultimate care, so when they do arrive, they're going to be in good shape and no scratches. And if they are, obviously, we'll take them back. So, that's where we're at with that. And we felt the price point was about, if you were buying a repro Backglass for a game from the 80s or something like that. Plus, this is pretty one of a kind thing. So we're that's where we're at. Yes, sir.
Have y'all started talking about doing another machine?
We've been so busy getting this one done. Like I said, we had that list of 100 themes. And so it was interesting to come about game one. Nelly is a theme. And when he pitched it to me, I was like, yeah, this is perfect. This is great. game two is going to be a little different now, you know, because it's like, oh, what are we going to do, you know? So it's that whole thing of we're starting over, you know? It's like when we were in the business, we didn't even think about what our next game would be. It would just be a nice natural progression, you know? But now it's like, oh, what would be our next game? So we've given it some thought. We're still not sure. Plus, if we're able to get this hybrid solution where we could do some kind of mass production, then that will kind of change the scope of things, too. Interesting thing with Wellnelli, we've gotten interesting feedback in both positive and, I wouldn't say negative, but fearful of, we sell T-shirts at shows, and we've got people coming up to us. That's funny, but my wife won't let me buy that, you know. So it's and really it's tame. I mean, it's a PG thing, you know. It is what it is. But people see it and are fearful of it for some reason. But I like that. I mean, I like the fact that it's provocative in that way. And that's what we kind of do. We like to do that. We like to have, especially with Elvira, we loved having all that provocative fun with her themes, you know. So we just wanted to bring that into this, you know. And I think we were successful. But somebody, you know, saw the backglass art and goes, wow, I got a 13-year-old son at home. I'm not going to be able to buy that backglass for my wall. And everybody looked at him and said, I think he's going to like this just fine. So, yes?
If you, you know, when you move on to the next one, are you going to stick with EM? you know, it's like you have bad new thoughts in, you know, either direction.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we've given it thought, it's something we've thought about, and now that we got friends on our side, EM friends, it's very possible that it could be EM, maybe a more later model than 1957, maybe something from the 60s, but yeah, we've definitely given it some thought. So it's possible. Yes? No? Next. All right. If that's it, thanks. I'll be here all weekend. So if you have any questions, a lot of people have asked me for autographs and stuff. Absolutely. That's why I'm here. I enjoy your company. I enjoy being at these shows. I've met a lot of new friends. Doing shows, you know, with everybody. So this is, it's been a lot of fun.
Greg, just a quick question. Where are you selling your T-shirts?
That's as Steve Ritchie said, make sure you tell them where you're selling your T-shirts. So they're out at Steve Ritchie's booth on the floor. So come by, see Steve. Don't bother Steve with my T-shirts, though. My wife is here with me, so she's going to be helping me, too. So definitely, yeah, it's at Steve's booth. Yes, sir.
You said you were getting freelance work. What other cool stuff are you doing? Like, did this open up? Like, have you had this much fun in a while? Like,
yeah.
Are you doing other stuff now? What's up?
You know, I am now reconnected to CoinOp. And I know CoinOp is a shadow of its former self, right? But there are guys out there that are still doing redemption games and different kinds of unique products. So, yes, I'm doing CoinOp again. And I'm not sure if this has opened it up, but I hope I can say that this will open up other things too. But I'm doing some coin-operated games. And the other cool thing is Tom Uban, who was a game programmer at Williams, talked to me last year. He started a microbrewery in Valparaiso, Indiana. So he said, I'd love for you to do label art for me, for my company, do the company logo. So I'm doing beer labels now for Tom, which is like a whole new palette, you know, a whole new canvas for me, and it's fun. I mean, I'm having a lot of fun. He gives me a lot of freedom, and that's fun. And then he hooked me up with a woman in Colorado that is opening up a micro distillery, of all things, and she's going to be brewing all sorts of liquor. And she starts with a vodka that she's test batching right now, and that's called Syntax Spirits, and they're out of Fort Collins, Colorado. Now they're in Greeley, Colorado. So she's just getting her labels printed now. So by Christmas, I might have a whole bunch of vodka to hand out as gifts with my art on it. So and it's cool because she's got ongoing ideas for her designs and stuff like that. So so yeah, there's a lot more opening up now, and hopefully you know, I can keep doing stuff like that. So thanks for asking. Thanks again, everybody.